Not for air. Not for air. Not for air. Not for air. I said not for air.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. You can listen to The Mike O'Mara Show at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Well, what have we here?
It's a podcast.
Fine.
And what excitement we have today.
It's The Mike O'Mara Show with Mike O'Mara and Rob Spiewak. Now, here's Mike.
Oh, hi.
Hello.
Welcome to The Mike O'Mara Show. It's great to have you here on a Wednesday. The week feels weird to me. It just feels off. It feels like because of the long weekend that we had, it just feels odd. Everything seems to be just a little out of the ordinary for me. And
does it have anything to do with the cold down there?
That might
is it still cold?
Although we're easing out of that, so I'm very happy about that. But it's just an odd time. We're entering into what I like to call the doldrums, which to me is the month of February. It's always been
you
since
hate
I lost
February,
my dad.
Yeah.
I just blah, 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 blah. But I've also become a bigger
but you love George
fan,
Washington so February's
you know,
good.
I'm a big fan. We're gonna go unusual today. We're gonna start something we're gonna talk playwrights. We don't get playwrights on this show very often.
Theater, Mike. It's
lots
theater
of authors. Yeah, Rob was a theater arts guy. So Dan mm-hmm. Rodericks, an award-winning columnist for the Baltimore Sun. He worked there from 1979 till 2025. He would write a column with all sorts of topics in the Baltimore Sun, a wonderful publication. And he has written a play, a series of plays, actually. The one that we're going to talk about today is called No Mean City, Baltimore 1966. And this is Baltimore has always had a curious relationship with Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
That when Don and I were doing the Don and Mike show, we experienced firsthand when we went up for opening day. This is prior to the Nationals becoming a team in Washington, D.C. And we went up for opening day because we assumed that the Baltimore Orioles were a Washington team as well. Well,
sure.
when they started chanting outside, Redskins suck, Redskins suck. We knew that we were perhaps in the wrong spot. But I've always loved Baltimore.
My memory of that day, Mike, is we were on the second floor of a bar.
I don't remember the name of the bar.
I don't either.
That.
But it faced the stadium. And towards the end of the show, you guys were leaning out of the top windows a la Mussolini and just being booed summarily by the entire crowd.
Because we didn't, you know, we were petty men and we didn't like the negative energy. And but I remember I think the first sporting event that I ever attended was Memorial Stadium and a Baltimore Orioles game when they played the Red Sox. And I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the city of Baltimore. I always have thought to myself, first of all, let's welcome Dan. I don't want him just to sit down there without being greeted. Dan Rodericks, nice to have you here. How are you, sir?
I'm good, and thank you for inviting me in, Mike.
It's great to have you here. I want to talk about your play, and I want to talk about the art of playwriting and all of that. But first, as far as Baltimore is concerned, I always felt that I would have done better on the radio in Baltimore than I did in Washington, D.C. And we were pretty successful in Washington, D.C. But when my career came to an end in the D.C. Baltimore metro, I popped up to 98 Rock a few times, and I just loved the vibe.
Great station.
The listeners and, the whole experience up there. And I was always fond of it. But you've been in the Baltimore on space for a very, very long time, Dan. The book, the play, I should say, because I'm used to talking to authors, takes place in and around the year 1966, which was a tremendous time of upheaval in the 60s in the United States. Before we get to the play, I want to ask you, when did you decide that you would be able to make the pivot from a columnist to a playwright? Because you hear a lot of columnists that become authors, but as far as writing plays, that's normally not a normal transition. What clicked for you with that art form?
I did write a book a few years ago, I managed to do that. But in my head, all these years, are voices. You know, I hear voices, and I'm a natural mimic. When I meet people and interview them for my column or a story, their voices stay in my head. And I always thought that a good distillation of my talents for dialogue, the way people speak. I'm kind of a mimic myself, like you are. I thought, you know, one of these days I should write a play. And then my first thought was to do a one man play. I had seen Eric Bogosian. Do you remember Eric Bogosian?
I do. Sure. He did a radio guy. He played a radio guy in a film,
he did,
right?
Talk radio. He
made talk radio.
Yeah. But he had been on stage doing sex, death, and rock and roll, and where he would become like 20 different people on stage. I thought it was amazing. And I thought maybe I could do that someday. So as I was getting close to the end of my run at the Baltimore Sun, which was a long run, I had all these stories. I had all these ideas. And I thought, well, I think I ought to try this on stage. So I wrote a play based on my own experiences, my own stories. That was the first play we did. That was called Baltimore, You Have No Idea.
You have no idea, boy. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, I think there's as far as we're, you know, the D.C. area and Baltimore area down there, we're in love with that accent. I think people love that accent. And it's been done in film over the years. Oh, yeah. Some good, some bad.
Well, when I moved to Baltimore, I had a strong Boston accent. I grew up in Massachusetts. So, but, you know, once I got over the language barrier here, I could understand people.
Hello there, hon.
Once I understood that, you know, Holland Town was actually Highland Town and not a place where Dutch people lived. You know,
Holland Town.
Holland Town. It's Highland Town. And once I understood that a paramour was not a married man's girlfriend, but a machine you cut the grass with, you know,
a power mower. Yes.
Yeah. Paramour. I got a paramour over here. We're going to go down. I like to mow my lawn with Natty Bow.
Hey,
you know what's bad for a paramour is styrofoam. Don't run over any styrofoam.
You guys are good at this.
I'll tell you, I don't think, I remember with Don O'Brien.
Oh God!
That's the only way Don O'Brien and I would talk to each other.
Yeah. Hello, dear hon.
I'd see him walking down the hallway, coming back from one of his lunches, and he would be.
Well, Mike,
he would be fun. Yeah, go ahead.
Mike, being Irish, you know that Ireland is called the Emerald Isle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I went to a Hibernian Society event on St. Patrick's Day once. I was assigned to do this. This is before I had a column. I was a cub reporter. And the woman running the event said that she was from the Emerald Owl Club. Emerald Owl, and I just didn't put Isle with O-W-L.
What's come down the Emerald Owl Club?
Oh, yeah.
Owl. Emerald Owl Club. So I went back to the newsroom and I write my story about this St. Patrick's Day event with Emerald Owl in the story. And it was a copy editor who I didn't even speak spoke English saved me that day.
Because when you're from New England, as I was, to come down to this area, there are a lot of moments like mine concerned a country station where I called Janie Frick with the E, thinking that the E was ye olde New England, and had a program director call me with that. As far as the year 1966, why did you pick that year?
Okay, so the first two plays, I actually wrote first two plays that are based on my own experiences as a columnist.
Right.
1966, I was, 12 years old in Massachusetts, but I admired the Frank Robinson, Brooks Robinson thing. I remember seeing...
Because they kicked the Red Sox ass every year. That's probably
Mike,
the reason
let
for
it
that.
Go, man.
Yeah. Sorry, I remember August...
50 years ago.
My memories, Dan, were the Red Sox coming down to Baltimore in August and just getting eviscerated in August. The Orioles always kind of putting the end to the Red Sox season. That's my memory. And I go back with all that. You and I are about the same age.
Yeah, though the Orioles, won the World Series in '66, beating the Dodgers four straight, but You know, the Red Sox are in the World Series the next year. 67.
That's 67 against the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah.
So did you save a newspaper for that, Dan? For
no, someone
the
just
following year.
Someone recently gave me this.
Oh, okay.
So when I got to Baltimore, reporters were still talking about the older reporters were still talking about the 1968 riots that broke out after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Baltimore and 100 cities across the country had fires and looting and homicides, violent riots. So I was wondering, as a reporter, a person getting to know Baltimore, I've always wondered, like, what was leading up to that? What were those years like before that? And this was the biggest thing that happened in 1966. But as I found out from doing my research, there was a lot more going on in the city in 66 than just the Orioles run for the World Series. It was the last time they had a Republican mayor. Baltimore actually had a Republican mayor who was a liberal Republican.
They did exist at one time.
The species now extinct. Yes. His name was Theodore McKeldin. There was a push for civil rights, for open housing in the city, to end segregation. The Ku Klux Klan came to Baltimore to say, no, we want segregation in Baltimore. There were white supremacist rallies held in Patterson Park in Baltimore.
Yeah.
A man named George P. Mahoney, a Democrat, ran for governor of Maryland with the campaign theme, "Your home is your castle, protect it." He was a Dixiecrat in Maryland who got the nomination to run for governor as a Democrat in blue Maryland.
Nothing like those Irish bigots.
Yeah.
They really took it to a new level, didn't they?
Well, no, he did.
You think of the Deep South when, think about busing in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
And that'll tell you all you need to know about, whether that got north at all. But that's amazing that it was still the idea of the Democrat being less liberal than some of the Republicans. Mm-hmm. So, it was still the transition time, right?
Yeah. I'll test Mike on this. So who do you think became governor of Maryland that year? Because the Democrats, the moderate liberal Democrats, were not going to support Mahoney. They shifted over to the Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a famous.
It was too early for Marvin Mandel.
Who was a Democrat.
He was a Democrat as well. You could, by the way, trace the. You want to look up corrupt politicians in the dictionary. You get a whole line of governors in the state of Maryland.
And mayors in Baltimore.
Was it Agnew?
Yeah. Yes.
Spiro Agnew.
One of the
biblical crooks.
Yes.
Of politics, ladies and gentlemen. Corruption, unparalleled corruption.
He was great. He was accepting bribes, cash in envelopes, when he was Nixon's vice president in the executive office building. They were still, they were still bringing him kickbacks from Baltimore County road contracts.
However, of all the vice presidents, he's probably the best one we've ever had named Spiro.
Yeah,
that's
true.
that,
at least top
something.
Three.
Oh, my God.
Mike mentioned, you mentioned Governor Mandel.
Yeah.
So I just got to tell you. So friends that I went to college with up north, they said, take a job in Baltimore. The Sun's a good newspaper, but you won't want to stay there very long. You know, you'll want to come back, work for the Globe in Boston, maybe work for the New York Times. Maybe you want to be a foreign correspondent. But, you know, go to Baltimore, spend a couple years there. It'll be good for you. So I get down here. After an internship at the Sun, they hired me. And the first day on the job, the editor says to me, "I want you to go down to the federal courthouse and the second chair, one of our reporters who's covering a trial." I said, "Who's on trial?" He said, "The governor."
There you go. Marvin Mandel. Yeah.
I said, "You know, this city has promise. This state has promise." And, I mean, it's just been an endless number of stories. I've never been a dull moment here. They made me a columnist when I was 24. Wow. And I said, you know, I don't think I've ever had a slow day finding a story, you know.
I got a question about
being a columnist. Before you do that, Rob, I just want to mention, so we give a proper plug here, that even though you're selling out this play rapidly, Dan Roderick's the play is No Mean City, Baltimore, 1966. It's going to run March 5th through the 15th at the Meyerhoff. of the Baltimore Museum of Art. So if you get a chance, get your tickets. Josh, you were giving me the stats on ticket sales.
Yeah,
that, they're half of
about
them are
half,
gone already.
Half the shows are already sold out. So, and I think they're about 80% tickets sold all over.
If you want to see
like
it, you got to get your tickets. Yeah.
You know, awesome. The biggest compliment I get from these plays is people who moved to Baltimore recently, younger people in their 30s and 40s who moved here, or older people remember some of these things. But the younger people would say to me, hey, you know, I learned a lot from your play.
Absolutely.
I don't make stuff up. This is not fictionalized. This is a historic drama, No Mean City. And the earlier ones, they're all taken from my newspaper column. So
it sounds like that the youths will go home and do a lot of Googling to follow up on how this stuff connects. But I love that you're setting the groundwork. Now, when you talked
about
that's
what I want to do, because these are my dad grew up in the city. So I've heard some of these stories from his view.
When you talk about being a columnist, I don't guess being a columnist is quite the way it was some years ago because everyone's taking their paper online and you're not, it seems like you don't have a relationship with your paper. I grew up with the Washington Post and we had Art Buchwald and Bob Levy and the people that would just cover what was on their mind. When you were named a columnist at a young age, did you say 27?
24.
So were you allowed to just go out and choose a topic and write what you wanted to write, or were you guided by your editor?
I had good editors, and I had, you know, I had mentors in the newsroom, older reporters, men and women both, who cared about what I was doing. But nobody cared about my opinion. I actually hadn't formed, I hadn't formed a lot of opinions about things, especially on local topics, right?
Yeah.
So I decided just to find the offbeat story, you know, start with just good storytelling and see where that went. And soon, you know, you develop a voice over the years and you get more confident in what you have to say because you know more. You know, I tell young journalism students, I say, you got to spend a lot of time just learning the territory, you know, understanding your beat and making phone calls, talking to people, getting to know people. So I did a lot of that. I didn't start off with opinions about, you know, foreign policy or anything. You know, but what the governor should be doing. I took it slow at the beginning, but it developed a following for storytelling.
In the play, you marry the big season for the Orioles in 1966 when they beat the Dodgers in the World Series with the civil rights issues that existed in Baltimore. How do you accomplish that? Because pretty separate issues. I mean, when you're talking about Memorial Stadium in 1966, that's the bastion of the white guys coming in there, and then in these predominantly African American communities, Memorial Stadium, and right in the middle of that. How do you how did it blend together for you?
Well, that's why the marriage, if you will, of Frank Robinson and Brooks Robinson. You know, I remember being a kid seeing the cover of Sports Illustrated saying, well, there's a black guy named Robinson and a white guy named Robinson, and they're both like great players, and they're on this team. I remember having memory of that. So when Frank Robinson was traded to the Orioles, it was considered one of the worst trades of all time. The Cardinals gave him up for Milt Pappas and a pitcher and some other people. Yeah. If you watch the movie Bull Durham, Susan Sarandon, in one of her voiceovers, refers to that trade as the worst trade in baseball history.
Wow.
Frank Robinson had been MVP in the National League. He was 30 years old. The general manager of the Reds, who gave him up, a reporter said to him, why are you trading Frank Robinson? He's only 30 years old. And this guy named Bill DeWitt said, yeah, but he's an old 30. So he became known as Dimwit in Ohio. Anyway, so
Frank Robinson was pretty outspoken too, right? I mean, he was
interesting because he comes over to the Orioles and they have a Jewish owner, Jerry Hofberger, who tells him, we brought you over here because we wanted to change the image of the Orioles. You know, we wanted to do it for the fans. It's a white crowd at Memorial Stadium.
Right.
He doesn't say it that way, but that's what he means.
Sure.
He tells Frank, that's why you're here. And Frank is resistant to being a crusader, right?
Okay.
At first.
Okay.
Later on, he becomes the first black manager in Major League Baseball.
Cleveland Indians.
And he writes a book about racism in sports and what he dealt with. But at that time, he said, what I do is I'm on the field, and this is what I do here. This is my contribution to the cause. I'm not Martin Luther King Jr. And he respected what the civil rights movement was doing, but he felt his role was just to be Frank Robinson on the field breaking through. And the Orioles only had three black players in 1966, but that was the start of that. So I thought, well, you know, you've got this, these two guys, a white Robinson and a black Robinson, leading a team to a world championship in a city that is struggling with racism and white flight. And I thought, you know, this is a good mixture to tell this story. And the, and that, that mayor that I mentioned earlier is in the middle of all this, trying to keep the peace, trying to, you know, he sees white people leaving the city. He hears from black people who say they're living in poverty. They need more opportunity. It's a, I just thought it was an interesting, interesting ingredients for a play. So
when you were covering Baltimore for as long as you did, I always thought that you referred to the, that we referred to Washington D.C. as the northernmost southern city and the southernmost northern city. Well, Baltimore falls into that category too, I would think, right?
You've
got a lot of and the
well,
thing
the
about
original Mason-Dixon line was Maryland, Pennsylvania. So when you talk about the South, it starts at Maryland.
And when you're talking about civil rights and police, and it seems to me that in so many of these cities, and not just Baltimore, Washington, but Philadelphia, New York City, you have these predominantly white police departments, and you know they dominate these cities on the Eastern Seaboard, and I would imagine that created its own level of tension, too. Did you find that to be the case?
It's interesting you bring that up, because that's addressed in the play.
Awesome.
Another thing I discovered in 1966 was that the mayor got rid of the police commissioner, who was, I think, considered a racist and had a terrible problem with police brutality. And there was a big report done that was finished that year on police brutality in Baltimore. And the mayor got rid of this police commissioner and appointed another one who was known for having handled well the uprisings and tensions, racial tensions in the city of Cambridge on the Eastern Shore, where which had earlier had confrontations between blacks and whites. So that's addressed. And then the mayor is told that he needs to hire more black officers. You know that. That you need to have a civilian review board for police brutality. All these issues come up in the play, if only briefly, that they are mentioned.
That's amazing. And it's funny when you talk about the more, you know, the better police chief coming in from Cambridge, which the Eastern Shore of Maryland was the hotbed for the Klan. That's where you had a lot of that's amazing to, well, to think. I still have all these memories of when I lived in Maryland. It's fascinating.
I do too. I came to Maryland as a kid when my older brother got married on the Eastern Shore in Chestertown, and everything was still separated. You know, there were signs that say coloreds and
segregation,
white restaurant. I mean, I have vivid memory of that because we were from up north. You know, I said, "Oh, this is such a culture shock for us." So a lot of those issues are addressed in a 90-minute play.
That's awesome. Rob, go ahead.
A question just about Baltimore and your beat. Over the Christmas holiday, I watched a movie called Baltimoreans. You said you had seen it as well.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah.
And then you go back, and there's other movies like Diner and Avalon that land in Baltimore. Baltimore is just a great storytelling town, or am I not reading this right? It just seems stories land well and tell well out of Baltimore. And why is that, do you suppose?
I wish I knew that. The answer to that, that's the way I found it. That's why I stayed here so long.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. You know, that story in Baltimoreans, it's sort of a happenstance kind of thing, right?
The guy
goes to a dentist on Christmas Eve, and it goes into the story follows from there, right?
Right.
I was walking down Saratoga Street one day, and a young man walked up to me and asked if I knew how to tie a necktie. this was just before I resigned from the Sun. This is like last winter.
And
he was nicely dressed. He was going to a job interview. And he had everything, including the white shirt, but he didn't know how to tie a necktie. And he had a necktie with him still in the cellophane. I said, well, the first thing you should do is take it out of the wrapper. And then I tried to show him how to tie it on here. And instead, I just put it on myself and tied it and helped him get. So
you have to, because you can't tie it backwards.
No, it's hard.
Yeah. So,
but, you know, I wrote a column about that little encounter on the street. And he thanked me. And I said, I thank you for making me feel useful today. You know, I feel like I helped this guy along. He was sweating a little bit, worried about getting to the job interview on time. So, I mean, I just cite that as an example of how things happen. You know, I eavesdrop on buses when I take the MTA bus. And
I think it's similar when you're talking about doing what we do here, where it's storytelling. That's really, I'm not a stand-up comedian, and but I love to tell a good story. We're talking, by the way, with Dan Rodericks. The play is No Mean City, Baltimore, 1966. Before we let you go, I want to play a game with you, which I think would be fun, because we have a lot of people that listen to this show that are Baltimore folk. They actually, and I want to throw names out at you. You guys feel free to play along with this as well.
Okay.
All right. This is the Baltimore name game. I'll throw a name at you. And, you know, with that much time under your belt in that city, I'm sure you have recognition. All right. I'll throw some Baltimore names at you. William Donald Schaefer, the mayor for a long time in Baltimore.
Do it now. Not tomorrow. Do it now. You just want my reaction to that guy?
I just get your impression of the people. That's what I want. You know, as
Schaefer,
far as
Schaefer was a beautiful man child with a terrible temper. He used to do this. Like, he would see me at a city council hearing. I'd be on the other side of the room, and he had a bundle of papers in his hands, and he'd see me, and he'd start doing this.
Flip him off. Great. That's awesome.
I knew this was the right thing to do with you.
Yeah.
All right. I'm throwing names out from my limited knowledge. Jerry Turner, the legendary television anchor.
Jerry Turner, right now, he was our Baltimore Walter Cronkite, really.
He was.
He was a great anchor man at Channel 13. Yeah, wonderful man. Yeah.
John Waters,
I've gotten to know John over the years, and he's put Baltimore on the map for being a trashy, you know, a place where trash rules, you know.
Right.
He thinks our city's motto, instead of being "Welcome to Baltimore, hon," should be "Come to Baltimore and be appalled." You know, that's
so on the same. Did you ever bump into, did you ever bump into Divine in Baltimore? Did you ever see Divine?
I did. I was at the opening of Hairspray, the original Hairspray.
Oh, yeah.
At the Senator Theater in Baltimore. And John and Divine both signed the concrete in the sidewalk out front. You can still see it there. And Divine had nothing to sign it with. So I handed her my pen, and she signed it. They signed it, and I still have it. I still have the pen that Divine signed her name with in concrete, with a little dab of concrete on it.
That's great.
One last thing about the opening of Hairspray.
Yeah.
Do you remember the beautiful model who was married to Rick Ocasek, Paulina?
Oh, yeah.
Korsakova.
Yeah.
Because Rick Ocasek was in the movie.
Right,
he was
sitting
down with John Waters and other people. I got to escort her to the balcony.
Hello.
And I sat with
look
her.
Out.
Yeah.
I was really one of the most beautiful women.
She was.
Incredible.
And she wanted popcorn with no butter. So,
Rob, you want to play this game?
Yeah, I do have one, and I don't know if it's too obscure or not. Virginia Baker. She was a local.
Virginia Baker, yeah. Didn't you work for Schaefer?
Yeah.
Yes,
Fun and Games. Director of Fun and Games. And she She used to work with our show. Did you ever cover the frog hop in the city of Baltimore?
Yeah. We had a crab race at the Preakness.
Sure. Yeah. Hey,
Mike O'Mara, I have to say something to you about years ago, the Don and Mike. I listen to it all the time.
Right.
I was just talking to a friend of mine last night about being on the show today, and we were reminiscing about all the laughs you gave us. But there's one thing, it might seem a little obscure that I would remember this, but this one of your invitations has been in my head all these years, and it was when you were spoofing the TV show 24 with Kiefer Sutherland, and right. your imitation of William Devane.
Oh, yes.
Remember doing that?
Of That's course. Right, Jack. Yes, Jack.
Are you insane?
Are you insane? This is it. If you're going to do William Devane, Dan, you've got to lead with your teeth.
Right.
There you go, Jack, because he had the largest teeth in show business.
Overbite.
Yeah, the giant overbite, but the big piano key teeth. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Are you insane? There's no way I can do that. That's right, Jack. We're running out of time. There you go.
There isn't enough time.
All right, one real quick, because I'm gonna think of 90 after a few. Polack Johnny's.
Oh yeah, Polack Johnny's down on the block.
Yeah, the block.
The strip joints is where you went after you went to the strip joint to have a there Polack Johnny's Polish sausage. Yeah,
and last but very much not least, Marty Bass.
Oh yeah, Marty Bass. Well, yeah, Channel 13 for years, still on the air. Got in a little trouble one year when he was driving around Patterson Park area in his car and told a young woman that he wanted to get inside her head. I want to get inside your head. And she turned out to be a lady of the night. And maybe I shouldn't bring all that up again.
No, come on now, Marty.
Come on.
If you're in Baltimore and you're listening to this or you know somebody up there, give them a call and let them know that tickets are selling pretty quickly for this. And you might check it out at the Meyerhoff Auditorium at the Baltimore Museum of Art, March 5th through the 15th. It's called No Mean City, Baltimore. Baltimore 1966 from the man who was voted Baltimore's best playwright, Dan Rodericks. And
he was also smart enough to write himself a role in the play.
Yes, yeah. You're in it.
You
right?
will yeah. get cast if you write yourself a role. No?
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. It's guaranteed.
Good luck. Come back and join us for anything Baltimore. We'd love to have you as our Baltimore historical expert because you really did well on the name quiz there. That was
really good
stuff. I like that.
Even Virginia Baker.
Virginia Baker. Dan, yeah. thank you so much. Good
thank
luck
you,
with
Dan.
The play. And thanks for taking the time out to be with us today.
Thank
we appreciate
you guys.
It.
All
right. That's Dan Rodericks, everybody. And I know that Josh's father is probably smiling. You got to make sure he listens to that episode because I'm sure he reads Dan
day.
All the time.
That's that guy awesome. Loved his Sharoka. Job for many years. That guy, Dan Rodericks. Oh, that was fun. That
he's
was
been
great.
At the Sun my entire life.
And wow. that's a survivor that lasted as long as he did in in this world of very tough times for newspapers across yeah. the country. And it just brought back all the memories of Baltimore that I had because I worked in Annapolis. That was only the second radio market that I worked in was in Annapolis. And I kind of you track with that, the Eastern Shore, Baltimore and all of that.
And don't forget your first affiliate. I mean, technically, your first affiliate was a Baltimore repeater of WJFK. So you had presence there.
And I really do believe the first sporting event that I would come down and visit my sister and my brother-in-law and I and his buddy would go to Memorial Stadium. And I remember the drive to Memorial Stadium. It was the remember how hard you're too young to have gone to Memorial Stadium, right, Josh? You're a Camden Yards guy all
no,
the way.
No. Memorial Stadium was my childhood.
Yeah.
And where I remember going as a kid and falling in love with the Orioles.
His mother gave birth. In Memorial Stadium.
To Josh.
Josh in section 336.
Absolutely.
I always remember Memorial Stadium because of the game where Bo Jackson ran up the wall. And as a kid, I was just amazed by
Bo knows that. Walls.
All I remember was this, and I know it'll play into the show because you've got something about it later on in the show, Rob. But my brother-in-law Paul and his friend Paul, another Paul, were busting my chops, and I don't know. We'd had a few beers, and we're walking in, and we had a little exchange with people, and Paul, his buddy, pointed at me and said, "Don't mind him; he's a PG-er." He's a PG-er, like Prince George's County, a local reference. And I remember my memory of Memorial Stadium was also that they had these crab cakes that were like bricks. these crab cakes that really weren't crab cakes at all. They were little discs, little hockey pucks, that were, in name only crab cakes that they had. But I go up to Memorial Stadium. And,
I'm sure they were better than the crab cakes down here.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
They're all bad down here.
What I remember at Memorial Stadium, it was in a beautiful area.
Oh. Memorial Stadium fan.
Memorial Stadium, so much fun to park in because they would do the double and triple park you in.
Oh, yes.
So you just sit in the car all night until eventually you can get out.
And then they built probably one of the best baseball stadiums in America.
Didn't Camden Yards sort of shepherd in the era of the new gorgeous ballpark?
They shepherded in the era of the new stadium, baseball stadium that was paying homage to the older
retro
stadiums.
Style.
Okay, I remember when it was open, it was such a big deal because it didn't look like anything.
Well, now there's so many great ones around baseball right now, but that was one
of the first.
Just not in D.C.? Not in D.C., no.
Well, not since we lost RFK.
Yeah, I know.
That was another beautiful structure.
Junior?
No, senior for this one. Now, actually, right. Mike said it's falling apart. Now it's RFK Junior Stadium.
Very good. We'll take a break, come back, got some news for you, and lots more fun coming up on the Mike O'Meara Show. That was great to have Dan on.
So cool.
Go check out that 1966 play at the Meyerhof. That's one
come
of
on,
them nice,
get them tickets now.
That's one of them really nice theaters, babe. Hon. Not babe. Hon.
Babe. Babe. That would be showbiz.
Is powered by Incogni, the bodyguard for your personal data. This... you must know. Data brokers are vacuuming up your info, names, addresses, social security numbers, and they're selling it to scammers, spammers, unsavory marketers, all the creeps out there. That's why your phone never stops a buzzing. I still want to do the Baltimore accent. Your inbox is chaos, and identity theft is always circling around. Data breaches climb every single year. Incogni hits back. They automatically remove your data from over 200 brokers, keep monitoring around the clock, and fight back when brokers push back. The result? You stay off their list, period. 4 flexible plans, protection for you and your family, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Incogni fits your life and locks down your data. Bottom line, if your info's out there, you need Incogni, and everybody's info's out there. Please check them out today. Use the code TMOS at incogni.com/TMOS to get an exclusive 60% off an annual Incogni plan. Incogni.com/TMOS. That's incogni.com/TMOS, everybody.
Now, this is from our Baltimore News Bureau, Josh. It's called Baltimore Tidbits.
Baltimore Tidbits for you right now, Hon. Hope you like them a lot.
And hit all the details.
You know, I should have mentioned Earl Weaver because he was around for the Earl Weaver era.
But I'm just glad you brought up Marty Bass.
Me too.
That was the first name to come to mind for me.
Absolutely. Marty
great
Bass,
journalist.
You can't talk about Baltimore without talking about Marty. And I didn't realize Marty Bass is still on the air up there, Josh.
He's still on TV.
He's still doing the weather. He's still, you know, as a child growing up in that area, Marty Bass is where you watch for the school closings every morning.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right.
The thing that was magical about Dan Rodericks is when you bring up Marty Bass, everyone knows the backstory, but he has the details. He says, well, Marty ran into some trouble in Patterson Park.
And like a great columnist, like those wonderful guys that write for newspapers and write funny. That's he did
lost
a
lost art. Just a lost art.
That was funny. I love that. All right. We're going to start today with AI. If you have been worried, like many people, I think, that are out there that are worried about the possibility of AI taking your job, you're not totally off base. According to a recent report, 92% of companies plan to increase their investments in AI over the next 2 to 3 years. Here are 3 tips. I was thinking about it with my kid driving to school today and what he needs to do to prepare to get out in the job market even when he gets out there with AI.
As a matter of fact, Josh had some words with me before the show. I've got 4 weeks.
Okay. Rob, get ready.
Okay.
Number one is be proactive. Don't wait for your company to help you get up to speed with AI. Employers are rapidly implementing AI tech, but not many are providing support to their employees. So it's on you to figure it out. Whether that'll help, I don't know.
Well, but maybe proactive helps in any job.
Don't look at it as replacing. You look at it as a tool.
Yeah.
Number two is collaborate with coworkers who are familiar with AI. Even if you've been doing the same job for a while, you can likely still learn something from your younger coworkers who might have more experience using AI. I find the whole AI discussion borders on a little ageism a little bit, right? You
sure.
see a lot of that online with, if you're over 50 yeah. and you don't understand yeah. this AI, well, I understand what the hell it is, and I've
if
used it.
If you're over 50 and you understand why this dog is dancing.
Yeah, if you're thinking about using AI and you have diabetes... and number three is use your human abilities to your advantage. AI may be able to do some aspects of your job, but it doesn't have all the human qualities you bring to your work. It definitely struggles with things like good judgment, nuance, yeah. and empathy.
True. Very true.
We need more empathy in the world. So use that to your advantage. If that helps, I hope it helps somebody.
Do you think
there,
that you the know? People of Baltimore were empathetic to Marty Bass?
Every day.
Yeah. Every day.
He's still there.
Every day.
Because that's one thing about Baltimore is people are loyal.
They are.
That's why Dan
they
was
really
at the
are.
Baltimore Sun forever.
Yeah. So much better a media market. So much more entrenched people that mm-hmm. stay in the area as opposed to the you know the fleeting nature of Washington, D.C.
Yeah, D.C. is a
nature.
Stepping stone. Yeah, no,
absolutely. Yeah.
I hear people all the time say, I could have been a star in Baltimore.
Yeah, it's
for
a
Baltimore
transient.
Media.
It's because D.C. is so transient, and it's just what have you done for me lately? And that's D.C. Baltimore. When I was even substituting on the radio up in Baltimore, I really, really wanted to get a gig after my Washington experience. And
it was weird.
Successful.
I did one morning with you at 98 Rock.
Yep.
And it's a totally different feeling than any other radio studio that I've ever sat in.
Is Schlegel still up there? Justin Schlegel still doing it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because once you join that, you can't leave.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you can stay forever no matter how good you are.
Not a better place to go once you're
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. You don't even have to do any show prep. Hi, Kirk. Anyway, moving
now,
right
Now, be
along.
Kind.
I'm sorry. If you confront your kids about profanity, would they respond by saying, I learned it from you, Dad? Like those old drug PSAs, a poll asked parents of children 6 to 17.
So.
This one jumped off the page at me today.
Yeah.
A poll asked parents of children 6 to 17 years old about their attitudes on kids swearing.
Okay.
47% of parents say profanity is never okay. That's a big number. Surprising.
Yeah.
35% feel it depends on the situation. 12% think it depends on the word. And 6% say swear words are no big deal. It's a mixed bag. I think there's a lot of nuance
I think
in this.
It has a lot to do with the age of the kid because an 8-year-old is a lot different than like a 13-year-old.
Right.
But I don't think my kids started with the foul mouth until college. I think once they went to college, that's when they sort of opened up the ability to use it. Julia still doesn't, but.
Me too. No.
But Robert is very open and clear to me with everything he says. He doesn't censor anything now. So
he uses the F word around you?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually when he's discussing weekend plans.
Let me see. Most parents claim their child never swears.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the kids don't around them.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
But I think, just teaching yourself growing up to not swear, I think ends up working out better for you professionally. I've been turned off by so many people professionally because they don't know how to manage what's appropriate and what's not.
You're right. And, you know, we've actually, doing what we do, it helps because you learn how to toe the line without actually saying the words sometimes.
Well, I am I'm conflicted on this this topic because I think I play fast and loose with my kid when he's just with me, like riding in the car or something like that. But I still call him on it. I said, language.
Sure,
but he knows he's not going to get,
grounded
if he uses a bad word.
Do your daughters ever call you and drop the F-bomb?
My daughters, not so much. When they were growing up, I didn't think of it as you. My kid's got a potty mouth a mile long.
Sure.
My 12-year-old.
Do you
think
that's is that a girl-boy thing? Because that's the same in both
that's
our houses.
It's an internet thing.
It's a social media. It's a YouTube thing.
It's a social media YouTube thing. It is. Let me see. 41% say their kids, all these percentages.
Yeah.
They say their kids are using bad words out of habit. What my greatest concern for Michael is that he slips up and he uses it in school. Because that's I try to make the distinction. I said, listen, language, don't use that in front of your mother. Don't say that. Don't when he's ever around any other people, I come down hard on it. When he's just with me, I probably am not as much of a taskmaster on that.
What about young Mike O'Mara? Did young Mike O'Mara ever drop a nasty word in a situation that you instantly knew it was wrong?
Yeah. How much soap did you eat?
No.
I did when I was.
I might have laid an a-hole bomb at the table about Richard Nixon a million years ago, and I got the old bam side of the head. He's still the president. Boom, like that. Yeah.
I mean,
there should be more of that.
There's no filter between me and my father. And as a matter of fact, one of his favorite words since he's been in care is seasucker. That we've actually, but he says the full word. It's totally not
that's still pretty taboo
anymore. That his wife uses it now. Because it's become a joke that we, you know, how's that doctor? That sea sucker didn't do anything.
Now, I just
how do the nurses feel about this?
We don't do it around the nurse, Josh.
I just heard a throwaway, and I believe we've got the most Victorian member of the cast here.
Yeah.
That when I did the cuff of the head here, it said there should be more of that.
Yeah.
Oh, you run a tight ship in the Soroka house?
No. I'm saying he's still the president.
Yeah. Oh, well, he's not anymore.
Okay, I get that. You know,
Nixon's dead, Josh.
I know. Let me see.
I'm no longer alive.
27% say it's just the way kids talk these days. There are too many gray areas. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think kids use profanity more based on my son. I also don't think it's okay all the time.
The YouTube shorts with the kids drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. Because there's no filter. The videos they can use or whatever language. There's no filter for music. It used to be easy to sort. Well, that's explicit music. Avoid it. You can't with the YouTube.
Yeah, it's
so it just floods them with it.
And right now I'm wearing them. I'm wearing my YouTube shorts.
Do the best you can is my advice. You can't.
I disagree, Mike. Do the worst you can.
No, I think here's the thing. You can't eliminate it with social. If they're going to be.
You're right.
If you're not going to put them in a box. And no,
they're
going to
hear it at school.
They're going to hear it at school. They're going to see it online. But what you need to do, I still think you should put the hammer down for certain situations and remind them of the fact that, you know, there's a time and a place, you know, and you really have to be careful because
offensive. What about during mass?
Okay, shut up. All right.
Also, be more creative. Rob.
since he's Canadian, William Shatner can't technically be a national treasure. I think that's unfortunate. But
I think he's an international treasure. What do you think of that?
A continent treasure.
Maybe that'll change as far as the national treasure. When we annex Canada, maybe that'll change. He is 94, so maybe it's not such a good idea to let him drive. Well, maybe it's a worse idea to let him drive while eating. You know, that distracts a lot of people, even 94-year-olds. But this is kind of beyond all of that. William Shatner was spotted driving in L.A. recently. He was eating, but he was eating and driving while eating a bowl of cereal.
Milk?
Yeah.
Yes, I've got the picture right here.
Eating a bowl of cereal while driving. Let's take a look.
Now, does it say what kind of car? Maybe the car was driving.
I'm not sure whether it was one of those self-driving. What a great picture.
I'm eating.
It's great.
I'm hungry.
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Look at my bowl. It's an Amazon Essential.
It looks like real hair on the side. Looks like he's still got real hair on the side, which is good.
Yeah. You know, I think he went transplant, didn't he?
Well, I don't know.
Because he wore a rug like in Columbo, but I think now it looks better.
He wore a rug way back in, if you look at Star Trek,
Trek was a rug, yeah. But I think it looks more natural now.
Let me see. Was he only taking spoonfuls when he stopped? If so, how did he keep from getting soggy? Okay, yeah.
We've all done it.
Shatner, yes.
Not cereal.
You've eaten cereal? You've eaten a bowl of cereal in the car.
I think I've done yogurt.
I've done ice cream and yogurt.
Yeah, I've done ice cream.
I've done ice cream regularly.
Peking duck is tough because you have to lay out the pancakes and the onions and the sauce. Let's be real.
Taco Bell, Chipotle, way harder to eat than a bowl of cereal while driving.
Yeah. And is ice cream. Very difficult. As a matter of fact, I'll go one further. I'll do it again today.
Attaboy, Mike. You tell that's as a support for William Shatner.
Absolutely. Taking one
for
the team.
Thank you.
For the first time in 21 years, LeBron James has not been named to the starting team for the NBA All-Star Game. Can you imagine that run, 21 years? Up to now, he'd been selected every year since 2005.
Wow. His name is French. It means the Bron.
This really isn't a surprise to anyone who pays attention. LeBron missed the first 14 games of the Lakers season with sciatica and didn't exactly light the league up on fire when he returned, or light the league on fire the way
sciatica
you should say that.
Sounds like something that Fred Sanford would get.
That's my sciatica. Last month, his streak of 1,297 consecutive games with at least 10 points came to an end. LeBron can still make the team, though. Reserves will be announced on February 1st. 21 consecutive starts in the All-Star game is a record. By the way, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is second with 19, and the late Kobe Bryant is third with 18. And Kobe would have, you know, that's
incredible. But of the three, only Kareem was in the movie Airplane. So he wins.
There you go. That's our sports nut right there. A new report says the weight loss drugs that you can get at DermGlowSkin.com could save airlines $580 million annually in fuel costs.
Because you're too fat.
Because they're by lightening the weights of passengers.
Yes.
But then they can also put in more chairs, make it even tighter.
Or, how about seats? The chairs. They can put in chairs, Mike. Chairs.
Folding chairs on an airplane, Han.
The beautiful gold chairs.
Sorry, I flew Spirit.
New analysis from Jefferies Research Services say drugs, the weight loss drugs like tirzepatide, Ozempic, Wegovy, those, result in a society that is 10% slimmer. And if that happens, total passenger weight across flights would fall by about 2%. That's all it needs to do.
Yeah.
That reduction would translate into roughly 1.5% fuel savings for airlines. And when you're talking about the numbers, that's massive.
Was it United that eliminated like two olives on their first class meal and it saved them like $4 million a year?
Incredible,
something like that.
Numbers.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
The only thing more unreliable than Americans losing weight is airlines being on time and not losing your checked luggage, which now you pay extra for, along with meals, internet, and individual seats. So good luck to them. But, we need more room anyway. Come on now.
I don't know, Mike. I think air travel is at an all-time great moment.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. It's really an industry is. Everyone loves.
Everyone does. Yeah.
I have to give the thumbs up again, though, to Breeze down here in Florida, because had a great experience on them, and thumbs up to that airline. So, we can give you a good recommendation once.
Do they fly into Thurgood Marshall International Airport?
I'm not sure whether they service BWI. They get those little obscure ones, you know? Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I don't know about that.
That's a prop plane.
They go to Norfolk is the closest they go to BWI.
Remember, that's when I started my career in Maryland. I remember reading about Norfolk, Virginia, and and then later on when I didn't care, I just call it Norfolk.
Yeah, go back to a previous episode. I'll give you the Norfolk cheer.
It's finally today, dogs are great at learning action commands like sit and stay. I think we all know that.
Yeah, not
they're
Sebastian.
Less good at remembering the names of things like what their squeaky or stuffed toys are called. Only an elite group of gifted word learner dogs can retain the names of hundreds of toys. Scientists know about 50 such pooches, but they aren't sure what's behind their wordy skills. Now new research is pushing the limits of what dogs can do. Scientists already knew that these extraordinary pups could learn the names of their stuffed pizza and donut toys from playtime with their owners. In the latest study, they discovered that the dogs can also understand new names by eavesdropping. 10 gifted dogs, including a border collie, brilliant dog.
Yeah.
The border collie's name was Basket, and a Labrador retriever named Augie watched their owners hold a new toy and talk to each other, another person about it. Then the dogs were told to go into another room and retrieve that specific toy from a pile of many others. 7 out of the 10 dogs successfully learned the names of their new toy, and they were just passively listening to their owners.
Wow.
So they were really using those cognitive skills that they have. Not all dogs pick up things like this, so it's unlikely your dog can do it, it when on
have you seen the dogs that communicate by pressing the buttons? Where they'll come up and press like a yes button or a no button or an outside button.
Yep, they've got the smarts to do this. I just want Stubby to learn 5 words. Just 5. That's all.
What are the 5?
Don't shit on the floor. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's it. Hasn't learned that one. Hasn't
Mike, he knows four. Mm-hmm. He knows four of the words. He knows do s on the floor.
Yes, absolutely.
Just not don't. Yeah.
And maybe he knows it and doesn't care.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't care at all. They're dogs. Listen, everybody, we've all had one of those nights, laughing until sunrise, conversations going all night long, and you feel more connected than you ever expected. Moments mm-hmm. where walls are going to drop, people feel closer. That's a great feeling. That's also the power of psilocybin, to open doors in your mind, in between people. This episode of TMOS is brought to you by Schedule 35. The most trusted name in psilocybin products. Whether you're microdosing for focus or exploring a deeper recreational reset, Schedule 35 makes every experience intentional, consistent, and safe. These are not party drugs. They're connection tools for your mind, your creativity, your relationships, and maybe even your soul. Visit schedule35.co, that's .co, and use the code TMOS for 15% off. Thank you, and remember, in a white room with black curtains. Do you want me to really sing it?
You don't. You, if you would sing it, that would be amazing.
We have to turn the music down.
Okay, kill the music.
In a white room with black curtains in the station.
Thank you. I don't know that we need the second couplet.
I don't want to do that anyway.
But it is. It's good stuff. It says
Schedule 35. Thank you very much. I have so much that I didn't get to because I forgot we're going to have the author on today. No, I can do that tomorrow. I'm sorry, I'm going through my own list here, so bear with me here. No, Carla, no, that's fine. I don't need to talk about that.
You're still together, right?
Yes, we are.
Good, okay.
I know people get tired of me talking about football, but, you know. Oh, okay, this is the one I'll talk about today, because this is going to surprise you. I'm online, and I'm looking at a post that I get quite often when there's a fetching young woman in a fetching photo in fetching attire. That's sure. I get a lot of that. I think a lot of people get that on their feeds.
Is it one of those "Are you still here?" pop-ups? Like you've been staring for too long?
No.
Oh. This
when you leave YouTube TV on?
Yeah, the Are You Dead? It could be the Are You Dead app as well.
I am not necessarily a massive fan of the Consuelos Ripa duo on morning television, all right? But they have a daughter who is now 24 years old, and her name is Lola, and she's getting
a lot... She was a showgirl.
Can't you discipline yourself at all?
I can't.
Can you? Can you? But just
you did an actual lyric quote, Mike. But it just happens in my head. I can't
Lola
help this one out.
Consuelos is getting a lot of buzz because she's very attractive and she's got a beautiful figure. And I how did I write this down? I want to make sure I get it right. All right. I would like the internet where you could lose your anonymity at any time. And I base that on simply looking at an Instagram or an X post that was a photo of Lola in a beautiful low-cut gown. She is a very, very beautiful girl, and she's a great figure, and she's got a lot of buzz online like Sydney Sweeney would get.
And she's 16.
No, she's 24.
No, she's 24. I'm just...
You're I wanted to see what you went into the. You're Josh, doing it again. You're so dry that it fools me.
Josh, that was truly terrific.
It does come bring you to a stop.
It's like becoming regular now that he's getting me because he's so authoritative with that. She's 16.
You can see pictures of her at timothybusfield.com.
You're talking about wanting to be anonymous while on the internet looking at some girl. It's coming across a little creepy.
Here's 24 is fine. That's a grown woman.
Okay. And a great television show and a great age for a lady, everything.
I will tell you, and meanwhile, the pun machine isn't even engaged in the conversation right now.
How do you dare say that?
What puns, how many puns can I generate? How many movie quotes can I generate?
In the day.
How about engaging in conversation for a change? How about reacting to what we're talking about and giving us your opinion on certain things?
Well, I do have a question about Lola Consuelo.
Yes, go ahead.
What does she do that's causing a buzz? Is she modeling? Does she host? What does she do?
The photo in question is a busty, low-cut photo, and she's there, I think, in a picture with her boyfriend, And then I see another post, another photograph, and somebody says, weird couple. And I looked, that's all it was. It was like, weird couple. Because the guy's not a classically good-looking guy. And she's a very unusually pretty girl. But I just said, that's where we are, right? The anonymity where you just snark to snark. And we've been on the receiving end of that. These are all the photos.
This is her question. Instagram. Rob, she is a singer, apparently.
A singer. Was she on Euphoria? I see a Euphoria logo up there.
I don't think so.
No, I don't recognize her, but she's lovely.
Here's the thing, though. I just looked at that and said... And we get this with comments where people are just super, super snarky all the time. And I'm like, wouldn't it be nice really to just... She puts a picture up for her boyfriend's 25th birthday.
Okay.
And it's just a happy 25th, blah, blah, blah. And then it's just... It goes right down the line of snark, snark,
so
snark.
So what are you
it's
saying
like,
is...
My point is, you wouldn't get that if somebody really had... If there was any even moderate level... of accountability. You know what
so
I mean? It just sometimes it just pisses me off. I don't know. It's unrelated to anything.
I don't know if what you're saying is what I'm thinking, but are you saying that you could still post anonymously knowing that there's always a chance you could be revealed?
Yes.
Okay, so it's almost like a game.
Don't you think of the hate groups that have commented for decades on this show and previous shows that we have been associated with, don't you think if there was that level, if they didn't have their silly little names to hide behind, that, you know, it's just, I sometimes wonder about that when somebody, look, if you're saying something controversial and you're generating heat that way, that's a different animal.
Yeah.
But if you are just putting a little birthday picture of you and your boyfriend, and then it's just like, ooh, they look weird. It's like, why are you saying that, you hateful humps?
I'm curious, Mike, and this comes from the chat room from NoDak701. Do you think Regis has an opinion on Lola?
Well, you'd have to get a shovel. Unless it was scattered. Does anybody know?
I don't know.
Does anybody
know if
Regis was buried or scattered?
I think he had to have been buried. Don't you?
I would think so. You like to think that because it's kind of, you take a traditional approach.
Well, Mike, I don't know if you recall Regis, but he was older.
He was a traditionalist.
He was buried in Indiana.
Oh, you love Indiana.
Indiana?
He was buried at the Cedar Grove Cemetery. On the campus of the University of Notre Dame.
Oh, it's a Notre Dame thing, because he loved Notre Dame. That makes sense. South Bend. Yeah.
Hello there.
Oh, hi, Reg.
Hi, it's Regis Philbin. I'm talking to you from heaven.
Oh, that's great.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
I'm so glad you called in.
It's I wanted to go back to Indiana.
Yeah, for the Notre Dame football, right?
That's of course South Bend, where you know they've retired me. And you come to the cemetery. Come to the Notre Dame cemetery. That's where you can see me
from the cemetery. Regis, can you see Touchdown Jesus?
Touchdown Jesus. There you go. Touch the sign.
Do you remember? I know I'm asking you to go back here. Do you remember Pippa?
Oh, Pippa. She was something else. Yeah. And may I take this opportunity, if you don't mind, to say congratulations. Congratulations to the Indiana Hoosiers. Oh, those Hoosiers.
I didn't know your middle name was Francis.
Could you put that up one more time since you took the time and effort? Regis Philbin. There you go. August 25th,
31.
1901 would be a little old.
Yes, I suppose you're right.
So
right.
Here's the deal.
Fine.
Now, Reg, I know you. And someone gave you an American flag, which I think is great, Reg, on your tombstone. But Pippa's got a daughter with Mark. Did you ever meet Mark Consuelos?
What a rack.
Reg.
Okay, that's it. We're done. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank
Goodbye,
you for calling.
Everyone. So long. Goodbye.
That's Regis Philbin, everybody.
Philbin, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed
so glad
that.
He called in.
Yeah, so nice that he was able to check in. I'm very, very happy about
we
having
had to find
Regis
him.
On the show. We did. That was great. Josh finds the tune.
For such a star, that is a really understated head start.
It really is.
Yeah, yes, it's really classy.
Every business has a story, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, are we doing that? Okay, I'm sorry.
The question is, who's telling yours? A podcast gives you powerful platforms to share your mission, build trust, and show the human side of your brand. The Podcasters Warehouse, they're a good outfit. Yes, they are. I can guarantee it. And they know that they can handle everything from gear to recording to editing to publishing to promotion. No tech headaches, no wasted time. You just show up and they amplify your voice. Podcast drive results, more loyalty, stronger connections, real leads that turn listeners into clients. Every show is a custom-built show for your business with studio-quality audio and video, plus all of your social clips, thumbnails, transcripts. They do it all at the Podcasters Warehouse. Your voice, our warehouse. Josh, do you want me to say our, even though I'm not really involved with the podcast? I mean, you tell me. I'll do whatever you wish.
Yeah, you're fine with our. It's me and Rob. Our. And we're going to need you for some voiceover work at some point.
So I can say we? I can be a part of it?
Of course. Yeah, we'd love to
we'll
have
give you.
You.
All right.
What's your percentage of the old place?
Zero.
we'll double it.
We'll figure it out.
all right. We're your production team.
Yay.
let's build your podcast together. Visit thepodcasterswarehouse.com to schedule your free intro. Call now. What, isn't that right, Regis?
That's right, because your story is too good not to tell.
Regis.
The Podcaster's Warehouse. And go Hoosiers.
No, who would be the Fighting Irish?
Well, no, but I'm congratulating the national champions in football.
Yeah, but you like Notre Dame only.
Bite me, Rob.
Oh, Reed.
That's it. The Podcaster's
Thank
Warehouse.
You, Nodak, for a $5 super
All right,
chat.
We mentioned PG County before.
Yes.
Prince George. This has been a Maryland show today. You
right.
wanted to talk about PG County. You reminded me that we didn't get to it yesterday, so tell me what you need to talk about today.
Well, Prince George's County is a suburb of that Washington, D.C. that we all live in, and I think that D.C. has a lot of good things about it, but sometimes we get things that are sort of not quite as good as the original. And this is case in point, and Josh agrees with me here. What would you say is the hottest thing in Vegas right now? And it has been for at least a year, maybe two.
Oh, I saw this article, The Sphere.
Yeah. We're getting a Sphere in Prince George's County.
The casino. Near the casino in Fort Washington.
But it's a little guy.
Mike, it is one-third the size of the Sphere.
No, of course it is.
It will seat,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yep. It'll seat 6,000 people.
As opposed to 8,600. 18,600.
I suppose because of the location. You know, you're not in a gambling mecca with hotel. It's a numbers game, right? That's what we're talking about?
They say that it will still have the distinct exosphere that defines the notion of the sphere.
It's the same company that's doing it.
Did you know they have one in Abu Dhabi as well? They have an Abu Dhabi sphere. So
that's
this is actually
one.
The third sphere.
Abu Dhabi?
Hi, Reed.
Hi, Rob.
Have you ever been there?
Yeah, I went there to watch Notre Dame play the Indiana Hoosiers.
Who did you root for? He's gone.
Based on where National Harbor is.
Yeah.
This is going to cause more accidents on the Woodrow Wilson Bridge.
Yeah, can you imagine that is the most hemmed up, complicated hunk of beltway to drive, right? As it goes from four lanes to three, you go over the Woodrow Wilson Bridge.
The rendering that I saw looked as though, I mean, from the long shot picture that I looked at, looked like it's like right on the highway.
Yeah, exactly. And it has
that's
big,
where the harbor is. It has to be.
Big light up things like they have in Las Vegas, like moving graphics. People are going to be driving into the Potomac to see this little sphere.
No, they're not. Don't worry about it.
Does National Harbor, do they still have the big Ferris wheel?
Yeah, the wheel. It's just called the wheel.
The wheel. Because I know you can see that from the bridge. Do they still have the big Cirque du Soleil tent thing there?
I don't think so.
Or was that
temporary? That was temporary.
Because all these things are big enough to see from the highway. So if you're going to build a sphere there, it's going to be distracting.
And Mike, here's the greatest quote from his name is...
Lola?
From, no, from this is from Governor Wes Moore. This is such truth right here. Maryland has a long history of providing world-class entertainment. Of course, because when you think showbiz, what do you think of?
Baltimore.
Maryland. Exactly. Maryland. Exactly. PG it's one County. Of the largest economic projects that Maryland has ever seen.
Do you have a trivia question about Fort Washington? Would you like to? Since
I know
we're taking
one.
A trip down the memory lane.
Josh,
I think I know.
What famous, you know, so
no,
let me
what
ask
famous
Josh.
Individual lived in Fort Washington?
Famous radio individual, I would say.
Oh, I have no idea.
A famous figure of history also.
That's a famous historical footnote.
Yep.
Yeah.
No idea.
He was on the WJFK power lineup. Mm-hmm. There it is. Duh, Sphere.
It's so bad.
Okay, if they're saying it's going to be smaller, then that's not accurate, right?
I know. That looks like the size of the real Sphere.
Yes. Yes.
The figure we're referring to, Josh, is a man who thinks like you do politically, G. Yeah. Gordon Liddy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I would be surprised if you didn't pick up Liddy. An episode or two along
Gun
the way.
Gun control. We're doing a lot of impressions today. Gun control is hitting what you aim at. If there is an intruder that you kill in your front lawn, drag him back into the house.
Hey, Mr. Liddy.
Hi, Rob.
Remember when you talked about taking the testicles and tying them with wet twine?
That's right. That's what the warriors would do so that they would be primed for battle. Weird.
Yeah.
A lot of that stuff.
And he also told time in jail, Josh, by watching the ants, right, Gordon?
Every day they'd come by at the same time. I strapped myself to a tree in an electrical storm to cure my fear of thunder and lightning.
So with this tiny sphere, well, it's not tiny, but 6,000 is not a really big venue.
No.
What's the perfect show to see there? That's like, I mean, like, I guess it kind of is on par with, oh, there's the Maryland.
There's another
one.
Render.
That one's smaller. Like it's smaller.
Yeah. Yeah. They just got to roll it in. Mike, they've got to build a stand for it and just roll it in and it's good to go.
Yeah, it's all away from that.
I think. I think it'll be on par.
Listen to the show for that today. Hey, thank you to Nodak for the $5 super chat. And
I think
Regis,
that it will be on par.
Regis is checking.
Oh,
in
Regis
again?
That's a wonderful super chat. But we were checking the books today, and it would really be great if we could get three or four more people to up the ante and provide a super chat today. That's really what keeps the show chugging along, Rob, and there's nothing wrong. I know this for a fact. There's nothing wrong with naked greed. Naked greed is good. Greed cuts through and clarifies. And greed.
I'm so, yes.
You mark my words. We'll not just save Teldar paper, but that other malfunctioning corporation known as the United States of America.
Regis, I'm so sorry you never got that role. Don't you equate the super chat with like the offering plate and mass? I know you're a Catholic.
Yeah, I'd like to remind all the people that are in the comment group right there to the right of the camera. I'd like to tell them, ladies and gentlemen, if you reach into the collection plate, don't wrap double-sided tape around your fingers to get the money out of the collection plate.
You used to do that with Ack Ackerman, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Ackerman.
Your buddy?
Oh, what a great guy. We ran right after playing stickball.
You know, it's a shame you're dead, Regis, because you would be a perfect size act to play the new mini-sphere.
I'll be appearing at the mini-sphere with Kathy Lee, and it should be a buoy zone.
That's buoy right. Zone, she's Kathy. A local girl.
All right, I'm leaving now. Goodbye.
Bye, Reg.
The Wizard of Oz screenings at the sphere make $2 million a day.
Yep. That's why it's there.
That's
why it's going to be there.
Horrifying.
And for the 6,000 seat venue, you get a lot of the retread rock and roll acts that can come through there. You know,
38 special.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, Styx. Something like that. Styx would be good.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I would go see 38 special if they toured with Styx.
Luke Bryan.
Hey, how you doing? I'm in a big round building.
Right.
Yeah,
he could handle that.
That might be too small for Luke.
Really.
Yeah, I think so. I think he does like stadium stuff.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I know we need a long time to promote it, but what about like for 2028, our next live show?
Great idea.
Thank you.
Except it has to be like 30 live shows because those things require a residency.
Yes. Yeah.
Because it's so much more efficient than video.
We'll do this podcast on a stage and sell out 30 weeks.
Exactly. With the corpse of Regis Philbin and the corpse of Gordon Liddy.
Yes. It's Mike O'Mara's Night of Dead Celebrities. Join me, won't you? All right. We've got, do you have beautiful video for us today?
I have an opening tape that will really set your mind a reeling. I promise.
It will fascinate you. Ladies and gentlemen, let me say a few words about the TMOS store at TMOSstore.com. I know a lot of you folks think this music's making me laugh.
This is the new store music, Mike.
It makes me want to do this. What is wrong with me today? I'm just suddenly not made myself. It was the whole talk with Dan about mimicry. I know lots of you folks think that the principals on this show are crazy. Yes, they acting crazy now, ain't they? But you ain't seen crazy until you see our store at MikeO'MaraShow.com. By the way, I have a bone to pick with the way we're promoting this.
I think prices, I see your bone, Mike, already.
Our prices are insane. Almost all the TMOS merch has been marked down. We slashed our prices to make sure we have room for our new 2026 merch. Items with new designs. Be the first to grab a nice beaver t-shirt. And with Valentine's Day coming up, you need an I Love Mike t-shirt or a Love Josh or Love Rob price to sell at 20 bones, people. 20 bones. So see who you love the most, and then we'll announce the winner. Yesterday, when we were promoting it, I said, oh, I got the first one, and then I realized it came from the Mike O'Mara show. So it was one of our people putting it up.
It was Carla,
there.
Likely.
Was it Carla or was it Josh?
It was Josh. Me.
Yeah.
You know, he's crafty. He gets around.
No, but I kind of felt like, and then you guys
what
both
do you mean?
Got... You guys both got love from real listeners, and I had to have one that was, like, store-bought.
Well, I think, were you saying that you saw it in the messages, right?
I don't know what you're saying.
I saw it in the messages.
So I posted the images.
You posted the images, and then there was an I Love Mike under the Mike O'Mara show.
Okay, that's probably your wife.
Okay, that's it.
Wish I had said that.
Yeah. see who you love the most, people. We got hats. We got coins. We have auto accessories.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, there was request from listeners for a license plate frame.
I love it.
Oh, so we've got one.
Oh, that's fantastic. Towels, sweatshirts, suppositories, DermGlow products, and, of course, Charlie's Choice Coffee.
Yummy.
And remember, the best part, everything you purchase is guaranteed to be delightful. And it supports us, America's most beloved podcast. Hurry up and help the show you love. Just click store at MikeO'MaraShow.com, the source for all things TMOS. It's official, it's authentic, and it's awesome. Thank you for your support. And by the way, my name is Mike. Please love me. Please.
Please.
I know I will lose.
That. Some beautiful video. Yeah.
Jerry Todd.
His real middle name.
John Records Landing.
Great jingle. Nice guy, John Records Landecker. Now, Mike, one person, it's the theme of the movie It's a Wonderful Life. One person's life touches so many, even if it's tangential. I mean, you could do something in your professional life that would have effects on famous people years and years from now. Okay. I don't know what podcast this is, but I think you'll remember the moment they're discussing. It's never cool to heckle a comic on stage.
Oh, no, but I mean, some comics rely on it.
Yeah, but I mean, if someone is taping their final concert for HBO, don't heckle them.
Seinfeld said his worst heckle.
I clipped a little there. I want to say that this is, he says Seinfeld, and this is Seinfeld's worst heckle.
Seinfeld said his worst heckle. He's shooting for HBO, this big special, after the show is wrapped, telling you for the last time. Suit on, Beacon Theater, walks out, and a guy had a blood-curdling scream and goes, Jerry!
Not in Mike, Jerry!
Not in Mike.
Yeah?
I didn't understand you, sir.
It was like horrific banshee scream. Jerry!
Jerry!
And I knew what he was talking about.
Wow.
So we got into it because I was like, I remember that. He goes, no. That's not on the CD. And I go, I've heard that. He goes, you never heard that. And I go, I saw it live. And he was like, maybe you heard it, but I doubt it. So we got into it about that.
So he got into it with Seinfeld?
Yeah, because Seinfeld is denying that it happened now by saying it's not on the CD, so it didn't happen.
We had an intern, Lewis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What was his crazy radio name? Lewis the something intern?
I think it was a word we don't use anymore.
Okay. I don't even remember it.
R. It was an R word.
Oh, okay. Like re.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Really? I think so.
No.
You don't think so? So?
I don't remember.
All right. That's what I remember. He was a piece of work. I'll tell you that.
He was a handful.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Rob used that word for all the interns.
Right. No, stop it, Mike. They're actually, I think it's, I get partial credit if you look what Barrister 8 wrote in the chat room. That's right.
Okay.
So partial credit.
Okay. All right. But anyway, that was, I remember. It was
we
like
got him a ticket
prank.
To the theater. Yeah.
It was the greatest prank we've ever had. I mean,
and it aired live on HBO, and then it was gone.
He says, Don and Mike, Jerry. That's mentioning our names, just to nakedly get our names on a Seinfeld special. I mean,
but
at that time, we were giving Seinfeld a lot of hard times.
But isn't it marvelous that now it is remembered by other comics? And that Seinfeld is denying that.
I love that. That's fantastic.
I do too.
Can you play it one more time? Play it one more time.
Absolutely. Let's go back to the front here and these two young comics here.
Yo, this big special after the show is wrapped, telling you for the last time, suit on, Beacon Theater walks out, and a guy had a blood curdling scream and goes, Jerry!
Don and Mike, Jerry!
I didn't understand you, sir.
It was like horrific banshee scream. Jerry!
Jerry!
And I knew what he was talking about.
Wow.
So we got into it because I was like, I remember that. He goes, no. That's not on the CD. And I go, I've heard that. He goes, you never heard that. And I go, I saw it live. And he was like, maybe you heard it, but I doubt it.
So that's that.
And we orchestrated that. Yay, rah, rah, yay for us. Our only way. We used to nakedly try to gain fame any way we possibly could.
Well, I assume you had it the next day to play on the radio?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, of course.
We
did. Yeah.
We only played it about 5,000 times.
No, of course I do. I've complained for a long time about Chick-fil-A, Mike, because they ruin every parking lot they go to.
Sometimes they even ruin
neighborhoods because there's too many people that want that piece of chicken with a pickle on it.
Yep.
But this is a new low. Check out this receipt.
I don't know if I'm late to the party, but what is a public improvement fee from Chick-fil-A? What is that, Chick-fil-A?
How much?
Oh, I bet that's a county thing. We have that here.
$2 an order.
$2.
So watch your Chick-fil-A receipts.
We have that here. I bet it's every place she goes to in that county. Because we have it here. If I drive to the Walmart in my county, it costs more than if I drive to the next county and go to Walmart. Because there's a public improvement fee that they tack on.
I don't like that. I don't care for that. My public improvement fee would be to get rid of Chick-fil-A.
Yeah, it's like a local tax.
Yeah.
Isn't that what sales tax is?
Yeah.
Come on. What the hell is the deal?
See, the deal is sales tax goes to the state and the county wants some money.
So that's like a county? Oh, that's a lot of money.
$2 an order? Think of that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of cash.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that buys a lot of pickles. Mike, let's close with this. Let's say you're married to a lawyer. I guess all of us could say it, but none of us would be truthful in saying it.
Okay.
But she's having trouble finding work. Your job, because you're shouldering all of the burden of the household, you're a YouTube influencer. So you write a song about your wife. I love this, and I love the fact that this song actually got her some work.
Buddy, hire my wife. My wife is an attorney. She's a lot smarter than me. She's looking for legal work in Chicago or remote at legal writing. She's the goat. Let me tell you her experience. She's on appeals, vehicular, animal cruelty, and SVU. I swear to God, if you hire her, she'll be a great addition to your crew. Somebody hire my wife.
It's catchy.
She's worked government and private. She's got a real great mindset. She's the light of my life. Maybe I can help this way. Comment your email and she'll send you a resume.
And Mike,
that's great.
I love it. And I wouldn't be doing my job. Today is National One-Liner Day. And I know a lot of comics do one-liners, but the one who is most associated with one-liners is Henny Youngman.
Yes, take long my wife, dead, please.
Long dead, but let's see if we can get through maybe three of these.
Say, I've got a brother-in-law, middle-aged character, still chases women, forgets what for. I got an uncle, 79 years old. He's going with a 20-year-old girl. He went to the doctor. He says, Doc, I want to marry a 20-year-old girl. The doctor said, this can be fatal. He says, well, if she dies, she dies.
One more.
A mother took a little boy to a psychiatrist. She asked, can a boy 10 years old marry a beautiful star like Liz Taylor? The psychiatrist said, of course not. It's impossible. The mother says to the kid, see what I told you? Go get a divorce.
Like that. It's a beautiful video.
That's the kind of comedy we specialize in. Clean, unfunny humor.
Oh, come on. Henny's great.
Yeah, my father hired him. Did you know that?
Henny would work for anybody. He would sometimes stop by like an event, and if there was a bar mitzvah in the same hotel, he'd go in and do 10 minutes for $100.
There you go. That's
it's always working. Always working.
That's it. We got to get out of here. We will be back tomorrow with a brand new episode. I want to thank Dan Rodericks. The play is, where the hell did I put it?
It's no here Mean somewhere. City.
No Mean City, Baltimore, 1966, at the Meyerhoff, coming up March 5th through the 15th. Check it out. Tickets are going fast for that.
Going fast, yeah.
Wonderful reminiscing about Baltimore with him. We'll be back tomorrow for Rob Spiewak and Josh Roke and Mike O'Mara saying so long, everybody.
Bye-bye, folks.
Want more? Make sure you check out the Mike O'Mara Bonus Show. Get it at MikeO'MaraShow.com.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
The rent stays like a buffalo.
Stripping down butt naked, bending over, and all you could see was cellulite hanging in.
How about that?